You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
CJ, how did we get here? When we did our Thursday show last week, we discussed a report about the Morello family of the Arizona Coyotes possibly wanting new owners. And that situation has devolved ever since. And we are talking on April 11th, and there is a possibility that 1 week from today, the Arizona Coyotes could be moving to Salt Lake City. How did we get here?
I'm not as focused on dates. I don't think this is something that has to happen the next week. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes, you know, a few weeks beyond the end of the regular season before everything's finalized. And that's because, you know, we're in a complex set of circumstances here. Essentially, what's being discussed, as far as I can tell, is that the NHL would buy the Coyotes from the Morello family and then flip them and sell them to the Smith group that would see the team relocated to Salt Lake City. And the reason that's complicated is you don't just have one buyer and one seller talking to each other. There's a middle person, right? And so the league is simultaneously working on two potential sales, one of the Coyotes to the NHL, the other of the NHL to SEG, which would move the team to Salt Lake City. And so we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. I mean, look, the news is the news. The fact that those discussions are happening is significant. It tells us for the first time in a long, long time that the NHL is finally willing, or at least, you know, seriously contemplating moving on from what has been a very challenging situation in Arizona, basically going back more than a decade. But, you know, it doesn't guarantee this is going to happen. And I can tell you as of Thursday morning that Coyotes players had been told that there's still a set of circumstances where the next year they could play at a Mullet Arena. I think that only happens if one or both of these sale processes break down and they're not able to kind of thread the needle and get everything done in time for next season. And so it's a very strange, you know, story for us to kind of pick through and for maybe the public that aren't paying attention to this every day, because everyone wants to report it like it's a done deal. I can assure you it's not a done deal. You know, you have, I think that the Morello family still does want to try to get a rink in Arizona. And I think as part of this, you could see them end up having the rights to any future team there for a period of time, if they are able to, you know, go and proceed and win that land auction. So two things could be true. There's a universe here where the Morello family wins the land auction June 27th, starts moving forward towards building an arena and an entertainment district in Phoenix. And also the Coyotes are playing in Salt Lake City next year. I mean, both of those things could be true. So it's not an either or proposition. And so that's sort of where we're at right now. I mean, it's a difficult situation. It's been difficult all year there, you know, for the players, for the staff of that team. I mean, I think the uncertainty has already been crashing down on them, but for this news to break, you know, on Wednesday, basically an avalanche of reporting on this in numerous sites, you know, hours before the 79th game of the season, a season that's already lost for them. I mean, I think that this is really unique. It's different, remember, than how it went down with the Thrashers in Winnipeg, where that all unfolded quickly in the offseason. I mean, the fact that this is happening still with a couple games left on the Coyotes schedule is very unusual.
That's where I want to start first. I have a ton of questions about this, but how do you feel about the fact that this story, in a matter of days, has gotten to this point where I know the fact that you're not looking to put dates on this, but this team could be gone to another market relatively soon. Like, this is all happening so fast.
Right. And there's players on the team that own houses in Phoenix. Some of them have played there for a number of years. It's home. It's where they have families and kids and have to worry about, hey, do I enroll my kid in school for next year, or, you know, have very sort of real day-to-day decisions or obligations, whatever commitments you want to call them, that all hang in the balance here. Because it is true. Like, I would say if you're handicapping it, you know, once the league has made this step where they're trying to get the team to Salt Lake City, that's probably the most likely outcome. But I can't predict if one or both of the, you know, the sales ownership side, the Morello side or the Smith side, if something doesn't feel right to them, you know, this could go off the rails. It could not happen for next season. And then you're back playing at Mullet Arena next year. And so this is, it's truly unusual. And, you know, the Coyotes have one game left in this regular season at home. They're in Edmonton Friday. They come see you in Calgary on Sunday, and then they're back home next mm-hmm. Wednesday for a game against the Oilers to complete the regular season schedule. But I mean, it's going to be a pretty unusual scene, no matter what might change even between now and then, whether we know for sure that they're going or if it's still just an open question. I mean, that last game, there's nothing really equivalent. I mean, probably you'd have to go back to the first version of the Jets, the one that moved to Arizona. You know, some of that did sort of spiral and become known in the last kind of days of that regular season in 96 before they moved. But I mean, this is an unusual set of circumstances. We're in a social media world. I mean, the Coyotes aren't allowing their players to speak, at least as of yet. They didn't open their dressing room as is league protocol after the game in Vancouver on Wednesday. You know, I'm not necessarily even criticizing them for that. I don't know what you would say as a player, but I'm kind of bringing up all these, you know, these examples as you know, to kind of hold up like how strange and weird and unprecedented and unusual this is. And, you know, in the meantime, there's still a lot of maneuvering going on behind the scenes about whether they can, the lawyers can get to a point where they're ready to close one sale and then close a second sale in quick succession to see this team move by next season.
Okay, before I get to the Salt Lake City portion of this, one more Arizona question. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of those, but one specifically with the Coyotes.
I was gonna say,
here.
You're not stopping at one, brother.
Oh, no, definitely not. What do you do if you're the Coyotes and your ownership? And yes, you are going to be bidding on that plot of land in late June, but what can you do to buy yourself more time if you are still committed to at least keeping hockey in the desert for a few more seasons?
Well, what's needed ultimately is you need proper facilities, like NHL caliber facilities for that team or for any team to call Arizona home or anywhere.
100%.
You know, like they've been trying to buy time and stall for years, right? There was land they talked about in Mesa. They went through the whole thing in Tempe with the referendum last year. You know, there's been other potential, you know, projects that didn't come to fruition. And so, you know, I'm not predicting because I admittedly do not know enough about whether this one has a chance of success or not. But even if it succeeds, you're looking at three more years at least before you're opening a new arena. And I just don't think with the way things are at Mullet Arena, my understanding, you know, I've talked to some former Coyotes players and reached out to a couple current members of the team just to, you know, take a temperature check would be the best way to put it. And like, it's not going well there. And, you know, I think that was entirely predictable. But, you know, the only reason to go there initially is they were trying to buy time to get this arena built. And it just seems that, you know, the clock is about to run out. But, you know, I got to be careful. I don't radio myself on my own show because
no.
I really want to say it again, again, again. There is a world where this could fall apart. Like, we're not at the finish line. The finish line could come quickly, of course. But, you know, it's a delicate stage of the talks in terms of getting everything satisfied on both sides of the agreement. And, you know, let's just see if they get there, I suppose. But, man, it's the reason that this hasn't worked ultimately. I mean, there's all kinds over time, though, is that the NHL has never lined up the right ownership group in Arizona, and they've never been playing out of the right facility. I mean, the arena in Glendale was totally fine from a arena standpoint. I was there a number of times covering games, perfectly looked and felt like an NHL arena everywhere possible, but it was a long, long way from Phoenix. And from what I understand, it was a long, long way from where a lot of their fan base would be driving from closer to the Scottsdale area. And so, you know, you just didn't have fans on a Tuesday night in the middle of winter that necessarily wanted to drive out there. And I, you know, I can't say I blame them. I find generally around the league, the teams that are most successful have pretty centrally located buildings. So they haven't ever had the arena in the right place and the right ownership group in place to make it sing. You know, I do think that we're going to be talking about them coming back if they do end up leaving here. I really just think the market is too strong. I mean, we have like new players from Arizona entering the league every day. I mean, the guy leading the league in goals right now is from there. But even younger players like Josh Doan and Matthew Nyes, you know, were born and raised in Arizona. And I know there's a number of kids coming behind them that are either playing the WHL or an NCAA. And you know, it's been a success story oddly enough, the Coyotes as a team have not been a success story, but from growing hockey in a place where it wasn't too popular before, they've actually had a lot of successes, and I think they will continue to. And you know, so what has to happen in Arizona is the same thing that's been needed for freaking 10 years, is they just have to get a building built. And I recognize, look, that's expensive. It's not easy. It involves governments. It involves a lot of moving parts. But I don't think the NHL, it just got to the point where it seems the NHL knows it can't just sit and wait and wait and wait and wait and hope that, you know, that things change. I think that they, you know, if everything works out the way the league is now focused on, you know, they're going to be taking this team to a city where it's going to host the Olympics in 2032, where there's already a commitment from local government there to build a new arena, where you have a very gung-ho owner in Ryan Smith and Ashley Smith, his wife, who, you know, have already owned the Jazz in that marketplace and the MLS team. And, you know, I just think that it's kind of a no-brainer if you can make all the dollars work and everyone be agreed that you move a team to a place like that, and you focus on, okay, well, someone in it has to eventually get an arena built in Arizona, and we'll come back, just like they came back in Minnesota. That's the way it's been described to me. This is Minnesota 2.0, if it all goes down. Because when, you know, when the North Stars originally left, there was no one at the NHL level who didn't think Minnesota would be a good hockey market. I mean, don't they call it the state of hockey, for goodness sake? I mean,
yeah, they literally do.
So, like, no one was doubting Minnesota as their hockey market, but they didn't have the right circumstances there for the team to function. Ultimately, they got those in place. They got a new arena in St. Paul, and the Wild have been a successful team, you know, from a revenue standpoint, like from an interest standpoint, ever since returning there. I think that you'll see something similar to that in Arizona, but how long that takes to play out, I mean, that's the big unknown here. That's the unknown. It could be 5 years or it could be 12 years. I mean, it just depends on what happens. Again, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but assuming they move before next season, then it's what happens in that market even once they're gone.
It's funny you say getting ahead of yourself, because again, this situation keeps devolving as it is just in days here. I'm intrigued with the idea that you keep tempering a little bit of the, it's weird to say expectations, but the sense I'm getting is that this could happen really quickly, but you keep saying that there's a chance this can fall through. Considering the situation that Salt Lake City presents with the facilities that they have, the ownership and everything else they have going on, what does that world look like where it somehow falls apart? Because I don't see it happening.
Well, the thing is that if it's going to happen for next season, it has to happen quickly. I mean, that's just a product of where we're at in the calendar and you know, all that goes into moving a team. I mean, the league has drafted two schedules next year that could be used for either a team based in Tempe, where the Coyotes have been, or out of Utah. And so, you know, obviously the league can put contingencies in that place in that sort of circumstance. But, you know, it has to get done quickly so it could all happen. And if it doesn't, if one side or the other fails, you know, I don't know when the exact deadline is, but, you know, I always point you back to that May 31st deadline when Atlanta moved officially to Winnipeg, or when that news was made public anyway. You know, I think that's the kind of time frame you're looking at. But here we are, you know, we're approaching mid-April. I mean, it's probably got to happen within a month or a little bit more than that, you know, for everything to be satisfied. How does it fall apart? I mean, I think there's a number of ways it could, but, you know, maybe if they go through a process, you know, with the Morello family, and what happens at the end, they're like, you know what, we don't feel comfortable with the terms of this deal. Like, we're not going to sell right now. I mean, that's one way it could fall apart. Similarly, on Ryan Smith's end, maybe, you know, he's looking through what the, you know, is on the table for his group, and he's like, you know, we really want an NHL team, but, you know, we'd rather it be an expansion team. I'm not sure we want to acquire this particular organization. I mean, those are the types of things, in very simple terms, I think, that could derail the deal. You know, again, I'm with you in that it lines up that it's likely to all fall together, because, you know, if it's $1 billion that Morello's getting for the team, you know, for a sale price, you know, that represents a pretty big growth on the investment he made in buying it. So he's going to make some money, assuming he gets some kind of assurances or something, you know, put in writing that he has rights to that market for an NHL team for X number of years, and he's satisfied with that. I mean, that gets done, and then it's really just about the, you know, as long as Ryan Smith's comfortable with the price he's being asked to pay. So, you know, it's like getting in a negotiation for a house. You can really like the house, and at the last minute, you might be like, just a little bit more than I wanted to pay, or there's something doesn't feel right. I'm worried that I'm going to have to put a new roof on in the next year. I mean, there's a number of things that could pop up here. And so that's why the league is in a tough spot in terms of a lot of this is getting out now. Obviously, They've sent a few updates to the Board of Governors in recent days, just as, you know, basically typical memos to update the process on where they're at. But, you know, they can't say a whole lot right now because there's nothing to announce. But we all know kind of what they're working on, I guess, is the best way to put it. And so that's why it's a weird story. But I mean, look, teams don't get moved too often, right? I mean, the last time it happened was 13 years ago. So, you know, and I don't blame anyone for this getting public. A lot of people obviously have to know about it. There's a lot of focus on the situation. And then, you know, once you're communicating to other teams, you're widening the network of who's getting the info. And, you know, here we are today.
While we're on the subject of continuing to paint these pictures of worlds of possibilities, is there a world where the Coyotes get sold to Salt Lake City, but the Morelos are still bidding on that plot of land? They win that plot of land, they build their district, and when the NHL decides that they want to go back to Arizona, they end up back in business with the Morelos.
It seems like that's at least being discussed, yes. I mean, again, a lot of things have to happen there. The Morelos have tried and failed a number of times to get other arenas built. So, you know, for that to ever happen where the NHL would be getting back in business with the Morelos after potentially selling the team, they would have to actually, you know, see one of these projects through. And so, you know, that's the first thing that pops to my mind. You know, I know that there are other people in that market that have deep pockets that I think have interest in being NHL owners. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily end up being the Morelos. I mean, we're getting a little far down the road that it's, you know, it's hard to say anything with any confidence, but, you know, I think it's possible. How likely it is, I just don't like the track record of the team not being able to get an arena built. I mean, at the end of the day, you can make promises and you can put out renderings and you can, you know, say a lot of things, nice things about what you hope to do, but it, you know, eventually it gets to results time, right? And I think we're past results time. You know, there's a couple soft deadlines this year that they blew through without, you know, getting anything done. Now there's, you know, this June 27th land auction. Like, I think the NHL eventually just realized like they have to intervene. And, you know, it coincides with the fact that it's only been since about 2022 that the Smith family has engaged with the NHL about Salt Lake. So that's, you know, it's a relatively new option that's been, you know, put on the table, that's emerged. I think it's an intriguing option. You know, Ryan Smith and his wife, Ashley, I mean, they're in their 40s, like they're young, they're very successful. They run other teams. They have a proven track record in the marketplace. They seem to really, 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 really want NHL hockey, which, you know, is obviously a positive if the person that's trying to, or the people that are trying to enter your league are that enthusiastic about it. And so I think this solution is kind of, it didn't appear out of nowhere because the conversations go back a couple of years with the league, but it's relative to how these things, you know, you don't flip a franchise the way you might sell an extra chair on Kijiji, right? Like you could post your computer chair on Kijiji and conceivably sell it this afternoon. Well, I mean, NHL franchises, there's a lot more involved and at stake in those kind of size of transactions and various things. So, I mean, this is relative to how transactions happen of NHL teams. This has kind of come on the radar in recent times. And I think that they're looking to strike on, you know, what appeared to be a lot of aligned interests here. You know, quite honestly, it's a solution to a big problem. It's a short-term solution. It might not even be a perfect solution. I mean, we should say the Delta Center, where the Utah Jazz play currently, which would be the sort of interim home of a potential NHL team, it only holds about 14,000 capacity for hockey. It was not a building designed with, you know, NHL hockey in mind. But I think that you do that because, first of all, 14,000 is better than 4,600, which is the capacity at Mullet Arena. It's an excited owner, and it's, you know, an owner that's going to get another building built. I mean, with the fact that the Olympics are earmarked to return to Salt Lake City in 2032, and, you know, it seems as though there's a lot of progress already been made to actually constructing a new arena. You don't mind playing in maybe a less than ideal arena when you know there's a new one coming. That's the piece that the Coyotes never had, is they've been playing in less than, you know, ideal circumstances, and there's no water on the horizon. They're just wandering around the desert. There's no water. There's no oasis. There's nothing but those computer renderings so far. And, you know, that's just not good enough after a certain period of time.
The computer renderings and stock footage, I might add. But with Salt Lake City, you've done a great job of building up why they're likely going to be the viable candidate to get the Coyotes. But I still hear the listeners and viewers of our show banging on the glass, wondering, well, why not Quebec City? Why not another team in Ontario? Why is it that Salt Lake City has to be the team when there are so many other markets, particularly in Canada, that could be deserving of a team?
You've got an owner, you've got a building, you've got a big enough market. I mean, I think it's that simple. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say there could never be another team in Quebec City, but I think the odds are long. You know, Winnipeg needed a lot to come together to get the Jets reborn. And, you know, I know we touched on this a couple months ago. It's not been easy, even with a good team, even in a city where everyone loves hockey. You know, they are struggling financially, and things have gotten better. I'm happy to report since, you know, I went down there and spoke to Mark Chipman and we, you know, wrote that story. They've had a, you know, string of sellouts in some of the games since. You know, obviously they're headed for the Stanley Cup playoffs here. And so maybe there was some bit of a wake up call there. But the point is it's hard doing business in small markets. And Quebec City is a small market. There's just no way around it. And so, you know, I think that's probably the easy answer. And right now you have an owner, right? It's like who's stepping up in Quebec City and paying potentially $1.2-1.3 billion for a team and moving it there and thinking that he or she can make money doing so. I think that, you know, the Canadian dollar is still struggling. I mean, we're talking about US dollars here too, right? I mean, I hope Quebec gets a team back, because I know people there love hockey and you know, they built a beautiful arena, the Videotron Center. I mean, it might be a little too big for what the market can support. It's just the cold, hard facts. And I don't think that the same concerns exist in Salt Lake City. Now we'll see. Not every NHL gambit is created equal, right? They've been to Atlanta twice and left. Then they went to Nashville, and there were times it didn't look great. They were almost sold and moved at one point, and you know, now Nashville's, you know, very strong, I would say, NHL market. So, you know, I think that it just makes too much sense at this time. And it's also a ready-made option. It's like, it's basically ready to go, right? And that was part of what Ryan Smith said when, you know, back in January 24th, when he said to the league that open an expansion process. He's basically like, I've got an arena here. I can host a team next season. I'm ready to go. I'm excited about this. And so I think it's, you know, timing is everything in life, right? And I just think the timing is right for this to come together for this team to go to Salt Lake City if they can complete the sale.
Just coming to my mind right now, I believe Ian Mendez this week wrote a profile on Ryan Smith, which you can read in The Athletic. He went to Salt Lake City for a couple of days, hung out with Ryan, and Ryan really tried to come across as a really convincing person on the city of Salt Lake and how the population is booming and how they're basically have all these facilities and teams in place to really capitalize on a growing city. I don't know if I'm pretty sure you got to read that story. What were your impressions of it?
Yeah, really positive. I mean, seems like a very bright man who's had a lot of success in business and believes in his community, has the ability to get things done in his community, which is important because they still do need to get an arena built ultimately for this to be something that's successful long-term, which is, you know, whenever you're moving a team or, you know, awarding a team through expansion, the goal has to be that it's going to be a long-term relationship, right? And so, you know, I think that he ticks a lot of boxes that way. From what I've been told, he's got a great rapport with Gary Bettman and the senior leadership at the NHL. I think that he's impressed them from day one. And, you know, I think that he's giving off, for me, a little bit some Mark Chipman vibes, which is that he knows how to do business with the NHL. I think he's done a nice job of sort of marketing himself, but also, you know, not stepping on any toes and just basically being ready for, you know, he's not making too many overt overtures about this. He's been ready to accept a team when one comes available. And it seems that one is definitely now available. I mean, I know for a fact that, you know, that the Smith Group is engaged in active talks with the league about, you know, buying the team. They're not dealing with Morello directly, as I mentioned. So it's two sales, not one sale. And anytime you have to do something twice, it's more complicated than doing it once. So that's part of the dynamic that's going on. And, you know, the tough thing too is we probably haven't shed enough light on it. It's just what it would be like to be a player in this circumstance. And, you know, I talked to Matt Dumba.
That was my very next question. I wanted to know how the players are feeling about this.
You know, I think that there's mixed reactions, right? You got some players on the roster that are young and probably, but they don't have these deep roots placed and they're just kind of like, whatever. You have some players that are due to be free agents. In fact, a lot of them on the blue line, if you go call up the team's page, you'll see that they have a lot of pending UFAs and RFAs unsigned. So that those guys, you know, might have an opportunity to go elsewhere anyway. you know, and then there's obviously, I think, some that will be disappointed that have lived there a long time, that own houses, that love the lifestyle. I mean, no one anywhere is debating that Arizona is not a good place to live and ply your trade. You know, I spoke with Matt Dumba, who was traded by the Lightning at the deadline to Tampa, and he was pretty open about it. I asked basically, like, do you think the uncertainty of what's going on is being felt? He's like, you feel it every time you walk into Mullet. He's like, it's basically like mental warfare for those guys. And, you know, that says a lot. I mean, I don't expect any current members of the team, if and when they do get in front of the microphones here in the next week or so, to say anything quite that strong. But, you know, Dumba was traded and has a little bit more freedom to be honest about it. And he pointed to the fact, Julian, they had a run where they went 0-12-2 from basically the end of January to the end of February. And, you know, that coincided with the Ryan Smith, you know, expansion application. It coincided with Marty Walsh, the NHLPA executive director, teeing off on the situation at All-Star. And, you know, all this stuff was starting to get, you know, I think grow a little louder and swirl. And Dumba said, like, we didn't even play that bad then, but he just felt like the weight of it all was holding them back a little bit, was just keeping the team from, you know, functioning at its highest level. And ultimately, if you look at that stretch, that's like their season. They go 500 in that stretch, a little better than that. They might actually be kind of in a playoff race today. And I know it's easy. You could pick any team's worst stretch and be like, well, if they won a bunch of those games instead of losing them all. But, you know, Arizona did start this season certainly not at the back of the pack where they've kind of settled in now. And I think that there's been a real, you could imagine if you were working this year and you just didn't know where you're going to live, you might have a partner or kids asking questions, you know, like just so many unknowns. I talked to Evander Kane too, actually, in that same story that just came out on The Athletic today. And you know, one thing he said, when the Thrashers moved to Winnipeg, he's like, it's the uncertainty that kills you. Like, he's just like, it's just like your brain goes in all kinds of directions, thinking about everything that could maybe happen. And you know, I think that's a hard place to perform at your job. It's hard to probably feel comfortable or, you know, settled in your life when that's going on. And I don't think we should look past that fact. I mean, I certainly am not sitting here celebrating that this appears like it's likely to happen, because I do know a lot of people in that market that have worked hard to make the hockey community into something real. And a lot of people that have, you know, tried to make the Coyotes into something real. I mean, what'll be fascinating to me is, like, if they move, get a new owner, I don't know what'll happen to the state of management, coaching staff. Like, I don't know how that'll shake out, but, like, look at the draft pick capital they have. Like, they're actually pretty well set up for a new owner to step in. Like, the last thing you want as a new owner, I would think, is a bunch of contracts that are, like, to underperforming players, like heavy contracts. Like, they don't have a lot of that. I mean, there's a few players something longer term, but there's still guys like Clayton Keller, you know, still in the meat of their career, still performing well. And, you know, for the most part, you know, they've got freedom to step in and start making a bunch of trades if they want with those draft picks. They got some prospects coming. They can be big players in free agency because they're going to have to spend money. No matter where they're playing next season, they're going to have to spend money to hit the salary cap floor at the present time. And so, you know, I actually think with a fresh set of eyes on this, what this team is, the assets it has, like, they could actually be pretty competitive pretty soon, I think, if done right.
Yeah. What you mentioned, just kind of thinking about people in that market, I can't help but think of people like Craig Morgan, who have been covering Arizona hockey for quite some time. And now that, if this comes to fruition with the Coyotes move, what does that do for him? What does that do for people in media? Obviously, we're media guys. We're going to think about media. Well, I wonder what that does for those guys and the fact that the Coyotes may not be a thing.
They're probably covering the NFL next week. You know, I hate to, that's just the reality. They could.
You're absolutely right.
That's just a reality. I mean, the NFL is a behemoth in the U.S. especially, and I think there's more opportunity there. And so, yeah, I mean, I traded some messages with Craig. He seemed to be in good spirits about it all. I mean, you know, don't want to share exactly what he shared because it wasn't meant to be public. But, you know, I think he understands, like, that. The one thing is if you've covered it as closely as he has, and I can tell you, I've been going to Phoenix for games. I think the first time I would have got there was about 2009, maybe, for a game. So let's call it the last 15 years I've been going there. Like, I never remember basically not seeing Craig around whenever you're there. I mean, he's been a fixture covering the team. And so when you cover the team, I think you understand, you know, sometimes some of the speculation that's gone on in those years has been nonsense, but I think it's increasingly had credibility, right? I mean, the executive director of the Players Association saying what Marty Walsh said. I mean, that is a sign that there's real urgency. And, you know, ultimately, of course, it's not Walsh's call. It's not the players' call where teams are placed. They don't have any formal say in that process. But, I mean, I think that you see things like that. You know, you see the expansion application. You know, it just was becoming clear that this was a possibility. And you know, now we're getting to the time where either the deals get struck or I don't even want to imagine, actually, given how public this is, I don't even want to imagine what it would look like if they had to return for one more year and still be figuring things out.
Oh my God. Like that's, could you imagine
that's the
that?
Alternate universe here is like, and I know that. So of course for the players maybe who want to stay, that's nice. You don't have to move, but like, it's just going to be, if it was hanging over this season to the degree that Matt Dumba called it mental warfare, I mean, what would it be like next season if you knew it was likely the last and it was just about, you know, needing more time to get some deals done? I mean, that would be awful.
I know we've spoken about the Coyotes for almost 30 minutes now. Is there anything else about this story that you'd like to mention that I didn't get to touch on or just deserves to be spoken about a little bit more?
Well, there's some interesting downstream effects, right? I mean, you might be looking at realignment if this happens just with teams. So we might get some new divisional positions. Although I will remind those of you that were too young, the Winnipeg Jets played one season in the old Southeast Division, in the same division as teams like Florida and Carolina and others that were nowhere close to them. But I think that, you know, this kind of move might force some changes there. You know, and I do, if I didn't make this point strong enough, I really believe Arizona will be talking about as a hot expansion market should this all go down. So, you know, I'll see if, see how it all happens, but I think the NHL will ultimately be back there, but you know, they just need an arena built, and that's proven to be very difficult.
That's true. On realignment, I'm not completely opposed to the Alberta teams being moved to the Central Division. I forget who had the mock-up. It might have been Zach Lang who covers the Oilers, but I think I saw one scheme where they had, I think, the Kraken, the Canucks, all the Alberta teams, Winnipeg, Chicago, St. Louis in one division. You put all the California teams in, keep them in the Pacific, but just move the Avalanche and I think Dallas in that division too. Like, I wish I had the visual for you to properly explain this, but that's just an idea that's been floated around. It could be that, who knows, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing more Connor Bedard in the division of the team I currently cover.
There you go. How does it work for you? I like that. I mean, look at that issue.
that issue isn't
solved yet because it's not front burner, right? I mean, and you might have saw that there's a report out about maybe the AHL team of Salt Lake City moving to Mullet Arena.
Yes.
You know, my understanding of that, it's like, seems like that's done. I don't even think it's way down the road, but I think it's a possibility. But all those things are the kind of details that have to get figured out after the major ones do. And the major ones are still, where's this team playing next year? What does that look like? How does the sale and the transition go? And so, you know, all that stuff we'll still have time to dig into, because I don't think by no means do I get a sense it's decided or cemented just yet.
For sure. A hat tip to Tony Andrakidis or Andrakidis. I'm sorry if I didn't get the last name in, but he is the one with the report about the AHL affiliate possibly being moved to Mullet Arena. This.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Episode of the Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Shady Rays. Get ready for the season ahead with quality shades built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. If you don't know anything about Shady Rays, they're a company that offers a world-class product rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Their shades have durable frames and crystal clear optics, making them the perfect choice for all outdoor adventures. Whether you want to go out to the mountains, whether you want to just walk around downtown, or you want to just, you know, hey, look cool in your own apartment, just like I'm doing right now for this ad. They have hundreds of options to choose from, so you're bound to find the perfect pair to match your style. Plus, if your shades ever go missing or take an unexpected hit, don't sweat it. They have the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair is backed by lost or broken replacements, and if you don't love your shades, exchange them for a new pair or return worry-free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop. Their team always has your back with personal and fast support. They got a real nice deal at Shady Rays right now. Go to ShadyRays.com and use code Johnston for 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. That's two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses, 50% off if you go to ShadyRays.com and use the code Johnston. It's their best deal of the season. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. If that's it for the Coyotes, we should get to another story that we've actually been talking about quite a bit on this show, but now that you've kind of written it for The Athletic, we definitely have to talk about it again. It's the future of Steven Stamkos in Tampa Bay and him being a UFA this offseason. Great job talking to players about him and bringing that story to light. What else can you say about his situation right now?
Well, I think it's really has been bubbling under the surface, and you know, I nothing has changed to the degree that I can tell, other than, you know, we're down to the last couple regular season games for Tampa, and then they're going into the playoffs, and then we all jump into the great unknown when it comes to the Stamkos situation. And so, you know, the goal for Joe Smith and I in working on that story, we went around and talked to a whole bunch of players, you know, mostly former teammates of Stamkos's, although a couple like Victor Hedman, who are currently playing with them, just about what he means to the Lightning, what's made him unique and special over the years. And then, you know, some of those players like Alex Killorn, Andre Palat, Yanni Gourde, some of those players have been through this with the Lightning where they were kind of moved on from for cap reasons. And so they've experienced it. They know the guy really well, and they've experienced what he's going through to a certain degree. Now, there's only one Stamkos, and I think that's what makes him different. I mean, if you look at it, he's almost half his life in the organization, and the organization has had him on the roster almost half their existence. Like, they almost neither side can remember a time without the other. And yet, you know, the fact that he is unsigned, I think, is pretty compelling. You know, Killorn was interviewed by Joe Smith, and he was pretty open. You know, he said what I think we would all know, like, yeah, of course he wants to sign there, but he did say, but you're talking about a Hall of Famer. And if at a certain period you don't feel wanted, well, then you're going to, you know, you got pride will kick in right at some point. And so, yeah. You know, I don't think that truly anything will happen on this file until Tampa's played its last game of the season. I mean, ironically, I think you could argue if they go far in the playoffs, probably easier to bring him back. I would think more of a case that they're still a true contender and that he's a big part of the puzzle. I mean, as we're recording this right now, he just had a hat trick this week in a game. He's up to 39 goals in the season, better than a point per game player at this point in time. You know, certainly not what he once was, but I think still pretty effective. And you know, I would imagine there's some compromise that can be reached between two sides that should want the same thing in terms of what he needs to be paid, how long the contract is, all those sorts of things. I mean, this doesn't necessarily need to be contentious, but the fact it just hasn't been addressed at all in terms of money and everything, it's a bit of a weird feeling. And so I do think we're at a point where it's possible we might have to imagine the Lightning without Stamkos. You get this close. You know, we had to sort of briefly imagine Pittsburgh without maybe Malkin a couple of years ago. He ends up signing in the last couple of days before hitting the open market. I mean, there's still time to get a deal done, of course, but it's just kind of hanging there. And a lot of people are talking about this. Like, I've in the process of talking to a number of Stamkos's former teammates, like, I got the impression that when they go out to dinner on the road and they're having a glass of wine, they're like, they're kind of like us, like, whoa, like, what's going on there? And, you know, like, people like,
is he coming back?
It's a point of interest, right? For a lot of people, I think, because he's touched so many people too. I mean, he's been everything. It should be said, when you get a number one overall pick in the draft, This is about as good as it gets. I mean, obviously, there's a few players that we'd put ahead of him in the hierarchy from his generation. But, I mean, he's one of a few guys ever with more than 500 goals and 500 assists. He's taken you to the Stanley Cup 4 times as a captain. He's won 2 in the community. You know, I know he recently did a Make-A-Wish, kind of situation recently for the Lightning. like the teammates, they don't just say like, oh, he's a good leader. Like, it's not like robot quotes. Like Andre Palat said, I'm happy he's my friend, which I mean, I actually think in a roundabout way, like what bigger compliment could you pay someone when you're saying, I'm just happy he's my friend. Like, it's like, I'm lucky to even know him is kind of how I would translate that quote. You know, Luke Shen told me about when he rejoined the Lightning at one point, his wife had just had a baby, and Stamkos immediately calls him and says, just stay at my house. It was during the COVID time. Things were complicated. Stays at his house. He said he gave me a car to drive for the year too. And I was like, oh, is it a nice car? He goes, it was a Jag. So, I mean, he's the kind of guy that's, he's opened his house. He's, you know, and he's not the only one in the league, but like, he's the point is he's as classy as he comes, as they come. He's been only outscored by Alex Ovechkin since he entered the NHL. Only Ovechkin, Crosby, and Patrick Kane have more points than him since he entered the NHL. He's been with one team. They've had all sorts of success. I mean, anyway, you slice this, he's the kind of player you hold on to. But maybe they won't, because the Lightning, if we know one thing, they have made difficult and harsh decisions in the past in an effort to try to beat Father Time, just to keep their cup window open. And, you know, I don't think you can rule out the possibility it happens again.
Absolutely not. And we are definitely going to be following up with this story in the off season. We've a tight, quick show today discussing Arizona and Tampa Bay. It is Thursday, so it's time for us to do some stick taps. Do you have a stick tap for this week, CJ?
You go first.
I was hoping you would. oh man, just today's been a bit of a wild day. I'll just, you know what, man? I'll just say, I'll just take this as an opportunity to say, thank you to everyone who wished me happy birthday today. Thank you for the messages in the group chat, obviously, this morning.
Oh my God, I dropped the ball. Chat. We're 40 minutes in and I didn't even bring that up yet.
Well, I mean, like everyone, well, I mean, like we kind of went through that like before we recorded. So I was totally cool with that. That's fine. That's okay. Dude.
So it's Julian McKenzie's birthday today and Pierre LeBrun's.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I wish Pierre happy birthday.
That's good. But it's just funny.
Actually, I don't even know if we're allowed to let everyone know that it's Pierre's birthday. He's very secretive about that, I think.
Oh, well, I just did. I mean, I think I think they outed him on Toronto radio today too. So,
ooh, yeah.
So I don't know.
I
don't know if he was happy about that or what. But
sorry, Pierre. But thank you to everyone who took the time to wish me happy birthday. That means a lot. Just seriously. So stick tap to you guys. Also, stick tap to Jaideep. He is a 100%er. One of my good buddies here in Calgary, Solomon Volge, was hanging out with him the other day, and he said some really nice things, and I put a mental note that I would shout him out on this week's CJ show. You might not remember him, CJ, but he met us at the fan appreciation event that we had in Montreal a couple years ago.
I do remember that.
Yeah, we got sent the photo, like him and his wife and their kid, they're all there. Like, it's a great photo.
Nice. Well, in that spirit, then, I'll stick tap the random stranger who this week, when I was out for a morning jog, yelled from across the street, CJ, I love the pod. Because, that never gets old. It obviously doesn't happen every day, but it's just cool to know that, you know, that there's people out there listening. So we're nothing without you. And I didn't do my homework in terms of thinking of a really deep and detailed one, but that was a nice moment in my week the other day when I was out running in my hood and someone walking their kids to school took the time to say they love our pod, Julian.
Man, this show is nothing without the 100%ers. So we thank you deeply from the bottom of our hearts that you continue to watch and listen to our show. We'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode. Get your questions in now. If you're on Twitter or X, use the hashtag AskCJ. If you're on Discord, you can use the hashtag there as well. Just get your questions in. We'll get to as many of them as we can for the next Ask CJ. For CJ, I'm Julian. So long.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JKMcKenzie.